Well, Kristen has already introduced me. She's taken about two-thirds of my talk by telling you what I do. She has told you that I am the proud mother of three children, two sons and a daughter, and I have a brand new granddaughter that'll be 4 months old on Monday. I want you to know that my mother is here. She said to me, she wanted to come. She's never heard me tell my story before. And she said to me she wanted to come. And she says, are you going to be talking about me? I said, it's my story. I don't think I would have a story if I didn't have a mother. So she is probably going to be in my story. As Kristen told you, I like to say good morning. I am Denise C. from Fayetteville, Georgia. I am an adult child of an alcoholic father. I'm learning to live the steps one day at a time through my Al-Anon fellowship. I was in Al-Anon for 2 years before my family and friends knew I was in Al-Anon. I thought if I would tell them that they would think it was all about them. And are you talking about me? Are you telling people about me? And I knew that it would interfere with my being a part of the fellowship. So I didn't tell them. But 2 years after being in Al-Anon, I came out of the Al-Anon closet. And I told my family and friends that I attend Al-Anon. Now, they didn't really know what Al-Anon was because I didn't know what Al-Anon was. So I had to explain to them that it was not about them, it was about me. And that was very important. I had to be in Al-Anon to realize that it was all about me and not about my family. I love, love, love Al-Anon. Al-Anon has saved my life. Al-Anon has given to me the tools to live a life that I didn't know how to live before I came into Al-Anon. I do want to take this opportunity to thank Kristen because she's the one that requested me to be the speaker for today. So I want to thank you for the opportunity. I never get tired of telling my story because my higher power, which I choose to call God, has changed my life. My relationship with him has changed. Before I got here, he was a big God that sat on a mountain and just struck me when I did wrong. But since coming into Al-Anon, we've become friends. He's somebody that I can talk to on a daily basis, someone that I can go to, and someone that I can lean and depend on. And I truly believe the slogan, let go and let God. Because before that, I only went to God with really big things, and he didn't answer them the way I wanted him to answer them. He always answered them his way, which upset me a little bit. But after being in Al-Anon, I realized that if I let go and let God, it'll turn out the way it's supposed to if I don't interfere. Now, you guys probably want to know, who is Denise C? Well, I can answer that for you better than anybody. I can today because of Al-Anon. Before Al-Anon, I could not have answered that for you. This story that I'm about to tell you is my truth. It's my life, and it's how Al-Anon has changed my life, how I was before I got here, and how I've been since being in Al-Anon and what it has done for me. Now, my story begins with a fairy tale childhood, at least I thought it was. And the theme of my speech today is, guys, I get to do something that I have dreamed of for years. I've always dreamed that I was this famous singer. But my family and friends keep assuring me that I can't sing. But you guys are a captured audience that I get to practice what I've been doing with the hairbrush in front of the mirror for years. So there's this old song that I decided to name my speech after, my story after, and it's an old song by Johnny Thomas. Get ready. I am looking for love in all the wrong places, looking for love in too many faces. All right, tell my family that I can sing. I I was born in Salina, Kansas. I was an Air Force brat the beginning of my life. My father was in the Air Force. He was a high-ranking officer in the Air Force, which was rare back in the 1950s because of the color of his skin. Now, I was the first part of my life after leaving Kansas. We spent about 3.5 years in Birmingham. That's Birmingham, England, not Birmingham, Alabama. We lived off base in a large house with the other officers and families in a really nice community. Now, I was fortunate enough to have a blonde-haired, blue-eyed young lady as my babysitter. Now, I loved her, and she loved me. And that's why I believe today that I don't look at the color of one's skin. I look at the inside, the character of a person, which means I can love anybody that I can get to know and that can get to know me. So I don't dislike anybody because of who they are or what they are. I judge people by the character of their character is what how I judge people. Now, I was the third child and the only daughter, so I was absolutely adored by my father. He gave me presents all the time. He was just a wonderful guy as far as I knew. Now, one thing I can tell you is I never saw my mother in rollers. I don't remember her being in rollers. I remember her all dressed up. I thought I had the prettiest mom in the world, and I still think that. I remember her all dressed up in her makeup and her fancy dresses. She reminded me of June Cleaver, you know, the Beaver's mom. Because mom was always dressed. I actually, when I was in elementary school, my mom had to come to school once because the kids didn't believe that I lived with my grandparents. So the kids didn't believe that my mother existed. And I would tell them how pretty she was. So I was bad in school on purpose, sent to the principal's office, and she says, "I'm going to call your grandmother." I said, "Oh, no, call my mom." Mom came there. I'll never forget. She had on an orange suit, and it had all this glitter all over it. Her hair was immaculate. Her makeup was immaculate. And when my mom walked up there, my mom was mad because I had gotten in trouble. I wasn't a kid that got in trouble. My mom was very angry. But when she saw the look on my face, I was so happy to see my mom because I got to introduce her to all my friends who had never met my mom before. So I was excited to introduce her to my mom. That's the kind of mother that I had. And I'm not just saying that because she's here, but mom was always, until now, at her age, she's still dressed immaculate. Me, I'm a tomboy. What I want to tell you is that I remember as a toddler sitting on these steps waiting for my father to come home. And he would always come home with clothes or candy or treats, anything for me, because remember, I was his only daughter and he adored me. Now, I love that attitude about my father. Now, my mother, on the other hand, was always angry. She was angry at him. She was fussing and arguing at him, and I never knew why. Mother got us ready for dinner. He never showed up. Didn't bother me because I know he'd be home eventually and bring me something, so I was contented. But mother was always angry about the fact that father didn't show up for dinner until well after she had put us to bed. Now, growing up, my father was happy and jolly, and he was just a wonderful fella as far as I was concerned in my very young mind. And mother was the one that was arguing and fussing with him. Now, I didn't know until years later that her attitude towards him, because he was just not happy and jolly. He was very, very, very intoxicated. And that's what mother was angry about that I learned over the years, that's what the problem was. But to me, like I said, he was just happy. Well, at 4 years old, and I'm not gonna go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, so you guys don't have to worry. You don't have to hear all the years. I'm going to skip some of them. But at 4 years old, my mother and father, we left England and came to Savannah. Now, we were only supposed to be here for the summer because my father had been reassigned to Dover Air Force Base in California. So we were going to only be here for the summer. And I had never been away from my parents. And they left me with grandparents and aunts and uncles that was actually almost the same age I was. And my dad said to me, getting on a plane, "Promise me you'll be a good little girl, and I'll be back to get you." Now, as a child, I held on to that. So I tried to be a good little girl. But that summer turned into a lifetime. My mother returned 2 years later. And I need to tell you, between England, I had a sister that was born in England that was 6 weeks old when we got to Georgia. But my mother was gone for 2 years. And my mother would call us every Sunday to talk to us. And I was, when are you coming home? I was the child that said, when are you coming home? When are you coming home? Because it just got to be longer and longer. And even as a child, I knew it was longer than the summer because they put me in school. So I knew that it was longer than the summer. But mother came home 2 years later with my little brother. So now there was five of us. But my dad didn't come home. And I used to inquire to my mother, where is my dad? But being a child, she didn't think that I would understand, so she never explained to me where was my dad. In the mind of, because I was 6 years old by then, see, I skipped a whole year there, guys. I was 6 years old by then, and in a child's mind, I thought that my father did not return because I must not have been a very good little girl. So that was the moment that I became a perfectionist. That put a black hole in my heart that I tried for years to fill up, to be good so I could be loved. A year after returning, we lived with her parents, and a year after returning, my mother got her own place, and she took my two older brothers, and she left me and my younger siblings with my grandparents. Now, to me, at 6 years old, I was being abandoned again by another parent. So that black hole in my heart actually got bigger. And I was very, very unhappy. Now, I need to tell you, I never saw my father again until about 23 years later when I was 27. Okay, give me a hand. I just skipped a whole lot of years. When I was 27 years old, I saw my father again. He came to Georgia for his mother's funeral. And I never saw him again until once more did I see him after that. My father, when I was 55 years old, was hospitalized. My father had five children here in Georgia and out in California, because he did stay in Oakland, California. Out in California, he had five more children. And I had a telephone relationship with one of the siblings, and he called to let me know that our dad was in the hospital in ICU, critically ill. I was told that he had lung cancer, and he didn't have very long to live. When I called him, there was a lot of noise in his room, and I found out those were his alcoholic buddies that was in the room with him. Well, they came there to bring him alcohol and cigarettes. Now, he died of lung cancer, but yet he was still in the hospital. They would have to wheel him out of intensive care, wheel him out to give him cigarettes and alcohol. This is what my half-brother informed me. When my father died when I was 55 years old, he died of lung cancer and cirrhosis of the liver. Now, the doctors couldn't figure out which one killed him, so on his death certificate, both are listed, both the lung cancer and the cirrhosis of the liver. Now, this is the second time that I've seen my father, because I went to his funeral. A lot of my family members wanted to know, why are you going to his funeral? I mean, he was an alcoholic. He didn't take care of you. My mother did all of that. My mother worked and took care of her children. And why are you going to his funeral? I said, because his mother was a wonderful person, my grandmother. And she had died a couple of years, well, when I was 27. And I wanted to honor her. And when I got there at his funeral, I mean, I didn't know these people. I just got a chance to meet at least three of the half brothers and sisters. The other two were in jail somewhere. They were alcoholics and they were drug addicts. And even one of the ones that I met was an alcoholic and drug addict. But the one that wasn't, that I kept communicating with, he wanted to know, I can't believe you came. After what he did, he abandoned you guys. Well, I came because the Bible says, honor your mother and your father. It does not say honor your mother and your father if they're good mothers or father. What my definition of what a good mother and father was, it says honor thy mother and thy father, period. So that's what I did. I honored my father by going to his services. And I'm glad I went, because when I saw the children that was raised up under him and the children that my mother raised, I realized that the best thing he could have did was to leave us. Because my mother, five kids, were all well educated. We all went to college, got degrees. We all worked hard, lived, and had very good lives. His children, like I said, two of them was in jail. One was able, after they cleared the funeral home, to come in and see him. And the other one, they wouldn't even let him out of jail. And the three that was there, one of them came very intoxicated. And the other two were, I just can't explain it. But like I said, the best thing my father ever did for us was to leave us with our mother. Now, I was never happy living in Savannah because that's where my family broke up at. I had an aunt, two aunts, and an uncle that was almost the same age I was. So that caused for a lot of jealousy and envy because, see, I came from England, and believe it or not, I had a heavy English accent because that's where I learned to talk at, and that's what I heard. Now, I know you're probably saying, she doesn't sound like she's got an English accent anymore. Well, I lost that to being in Savannah. Now I have this beautiful Southern dialect that you now hear. My aunt and uncles were not happy about me being there with them because I had this wonderful English accent. I had this beautiful long hair. Everybody wanted to hear me talk. The neighbors and the family members, the people in the neighborhood, they'd give me a dime to talk. And so I would talk my head off. They didn't get dimes. I got the dimes to talk. And that made them very jealous of me. And they wasn't jealous of my younger siblings. It was just me. My aunt and my uncles, my aunt and my one uncle, I had two aunts and an uncle, they told, because of their jealousy of me, they told everybody in the neighborhood that my parents left me on their parents' doorstep because they didn't want me. Now, this hurt my feelings. Even as being a child, that hurt my feelings. Well, they nicknamed me Runaway Willie's daughter. That was my father's name. And so all of the kids in the neighborhood started calling me Runaway Willie's daughter, which horrified me. But that was all right. Because that was the very moment I decided that I would be a good little girl, love everybody, and do everything for everybody. Therefore, I was going to get that love back. So there I was again. Get ready, y'all. I was looking for love in all the wrong places, looking for love in too many faces. Now, I told my sister I was going to sing this song to you guys, and she made me promise that I wouldn't do it. And I said, I'm going to do it. I've got my crowd, and I'm going to do it. Now, at 16 years old, here I go again. I skipped all the way from 6 to 16. I told you guys I wasn't going to give you every year. But at 16 years old, I met this guy in school. If you remember back in the early 70s, afros, he had the biggest afro. I mean, really, his afro must have sat on his shoulders. He had the biggest afro in school. He was very popular, and all the girls liked him. Guess who he chose? He chose me. And that made me feel, for the first time in a long time, that I was loved. And so from 16 to 17 years old, from 10th grade, 11th grade, and 12th grade, I dated this guy. Now, on the night of my senior prom, he said the words to me that you probably already know. If you love me, then you'll show me. And you guys know what that meant. So at 17 and a half years old, I got pregnant with my first child. He was born 2 months after my 18th birthday. Now, I love my son. My oldest son is my heart. My mother really thinks he's her heart, but he's really my heart. I love my oldest son. But I could have waited to have him and not have him at 18 years old. Well, at 18 years old, his father's parents was going to do a shotgun wedding. We were going to get married before that child was born. Well, I didn't want to get married. I wanted to go to college. After I had the baby, I wanted to go to college. And I knew that if I went and got married, I wouldn't have the opportunity to go to college. Because my mother didn't go to college, and she went to college. She didn't finish. She wanted that for all of us. So that was something, when I got pregnant, that really upset her, is the fact that she thought I wasn't going to go to college. But I knew in my heart that I wanted to go. So I rejected the shotgun wedding that his parents tried to force me into. And so everybody allowed me. I did say allow me to go to college. I went to college, and I graduated in 3 years, going both to Savannah State in the daytime and Armstrong at night. I graduated in 3 years because I wanted to graduate with my graduating high school class, which I left most of them behind anyway. I went to college and graduated in 3 years with a degree in accounting. Now, I didn't want to be an accountant. I wanted to be a school teacher. I wanted to be a kindergarten teacher because I wanted to love on children and give them the love I felt I did not receive when I was a child. But I did very well on the math entrance exam to college, and all of the professors highly recommend that I do something in math. So I went for the big bucks. I majored in accounting. And what a senior premium audit specialist is an insurance auditor. I audit workers' comp and general liabilities and commercial auto policies to get the right premium for the company. So now, Kristen, you know what that is. So not being in elementary ed, it always tore at my heart. I think that's why I became a Girl Scout leader, so that I could pour into children, so I can let them love on them like I felt as a child, as in my child's mind, that I didn't get. Now, not that my parents didn't love me. I assume my father did. I mean, like I said, I didn't know him. But when I got out of, when I graduated, 21 days after I graduated from college, I married. Remember now, the guy with the big afro. We got married. And now my son, who was almost three years old, was in the wedding. And I said to them, I don't want a big wedding. Well, nobody listens to me. I had a big wedding. I don't want a white dress on. Well, nobody listens to me. My dress was so close to white, they kept saying it was off-white. I didn't see it until the night before the wedding because my aunt, who was a home ec teacher, made it for me, and she only showed me the undergarment. It was so white. Guys, it was white. It wasn't off-white. And I said, no train, you know, just something, whatever. You didn't really have to cover my face because my son was the ring bearer in the wedding. But my train was so far down the aisle, I felt like I was Princess Diana. That's how long it was. But right before the wedding, I was getting dressed in one room and my bridesmaids was getting dressed in another room. And they were crying. When I came in, I said, oh my God, they're so happy for me. I'm finally getting this fairy tale life that I want. I'm finally marrying the guy with the big afro. I'm marrying the guy of my dreams. And I've got my college degree. Everything is going to be super. So they're happy for me. Little did I know, they were crying because my future husband, which would have been my husband in about an hour, drug dealing, drug selling, alcoholic girlfriend was at the wedding. Now, mind you, she was there because I invited her. I invited her because he requested that I invite her. And I just thought she was a classmate of his, so it was no problem for me. But that's why my bridesmaids were crying, because they knew of it. I was so busy in college trying to graduate, I didn't even know that this affair was going on. But they knew, and that's why they was crying. Well, the night of my wedding, when I was home with my girlfriends opening up gifts and, you know, just happy and joyous as I can be, he was at his girlfriend's house. Now, I didn't know that until later that that's where he was. I thought he was out with the guys. But he was at his girlfriend's house. So that night, when my girlfriends were, they were still unhappy, and I couldn't understand why, because I had what I wanted. I was marrying the guy of my dreams, and I thought I wasn't looking for love in all the wrong places. I thought I had found the love of my life, and I'd spend the happiest days of my life. But that marriage lasted for 6 months. 4 months after the marriage, I went home to my mother. She was saying, oh, you didn't give it enough time. You need to go back and try a little harder. It's only been 4 months. See, she didn't know what was going on in my home. So she informed me that I needed to go back, and I went back. Well, 2 months later, my husband, who had was on drugs and alcohol, and he was very violent. My mother didn't know that because I didn't share that with my family, that I was being abused physically and verbally being abused. And that's why I left after 4 months, because I found out about the girlfriend. And I'm going to tell you how I found out about the girlfriend. His best friend came to my house one night looking for him, and he had just gotten dressed up, I mean, looking fine with that big afro, and he was going out with his best friend. Well, his best friend came to my house that night and said, "Where was he?" I said, "He's with you." And he stayed there. He just shook his head, and he stayed there with me about an hour watching television. Never forget that, watching television. And that night, when he came in, he didn't come in till the next morning. He did call and said he was going to spend the night over to his friend's house, who had been spending an hour or two with me. So the next morning, I didn't say anything. The next morning, his friend knocked on the door, and he kind of pushed him out the door. "I tell her I was with you." He said, "I can't tell your wife you were with me. I was with her." So when his friend left, he got very angry at me. He pulled a gun on me. He said, "Why would you let me lie that I was with this guy when you knew I wasn't? Now, why did I let him?" So he got angry at me and got very physical with me. Well, one thing I knew, my mother had asked me to pick her up at 9 o'clock. And to my mother, 9 o'clock means 9 o'clock. And I knew, I sat up all day waiting on her, because I knew if 9:01, my phone was going to ring, because he wouldn't let me use the phone. I was just sitting there with him with this gun in his shoebox across his lap. And at 9:01, the phone rung, and I just knocked it off the hook, and I started yelling. Well, it didn't take but 15 minutes. My mother doesn't drive, but it didn't take but 15 minutes for my mother to get to my place. And she was knocking on the door. And it was like, "Give me my daughter." And we were both trying to tell her what was going on. And she says, "I just want to know one thing. Do you want to come home?" And I said, "Yes." And that's the day, 6 months after my marriage, that I went home to my mother. Now, you know, this was the mother that I thought was so angry at my father, but that's who rescued me from that violent marriage. And they didn't know until years later how bad things was for me. But I decided now, remember now, I'm a lover of all people and blind as a bat to what was happening right in front of my face. So surely, I had learned my lesson. And this time, I was going to pick a guy that was a happy drunk. I had the violent one, so I was going to pick one that was a happy. Remember now, I was still looking for love in all the wrong places, looking for love in all the wrong faces. Still had that attitude. I was still looking for love. I wanted to be loved. So this time, I dated a guy that I met in kindergarten. Now, when I was in kindergarten, he was my best friend. And when I left my first husband, he said to me, "I need to let you know how I feel about you. I've always liked you." And I was really surprised, because in kindergarten, I met him swinging on the monkey bars, and he was down there looking under my dress. So that should have told me right there that this probably wasn't the person that I was supposed to marry. But this is who I dated, because he came to me after my divorce, and he informed me how he felt about me. And that's who I did. Look, I know he was an alcoholic. I know he drunk, but he was happy. And you got to remember, I had grandfathers, minor players in my life that was alcoholic, that was happy. My grandfathers were happy. They would give you money. Oh, the drunker my grandfather got, the more money I could get from him. And so I figured he's going to be all right, because he's a happy drunk. I mean, he was the life of the party. He could dance, and I could watch it. To this day right now, he is one of the best dancers I know. And I don't even like dancing with him. I like to watch him dance, because it just does something to me. So this is who I was going to marry, because my husband of 35 years grew up like I did. His father abandoned their family, His mother remarried, went with her new husband, and left him with his grandparent. So see, birds of a feather flock together. So I figure, you know what, now I can love him past all of this. I can make sure that he gets all the love he needs, and eventually he's probably going to stop drinking because I'm going to be so good to him, I'm going to love him past his hurt and just make him the perfect husband. Now, sick people look for sick people, and that's what I was. Yet again, I was looking for love in all the wrong places, looking for love in too many faces. Can't wait to get this tape to let my sister hear that I can sing. See, when I married my second husband, I was looking for the perfect family. I was looking for that knight in shining armor, the guy on the white horse, the white picket fence, and this guy was and is a great provider. When I married him, I just saw us as what I call the fan family. You know the fan family? The one at the church that you get from the funeral home where the father, the mother, and the children are all dressed up in church and looking perfect. Well, that's what we were. We were the fan families to the outside world. Nobody knew how much my husband drank. But he was never mean with it. He was always, like I said, a happy drunk. He was the life of the party. I was the crazy one, pouring alcohol down the drain, hiding his keys. I've even run behind the truck, holding on to the handle, trying to stop him from drinking, crying and screaming and yelling. Now, who did I sound like? Didn't I say my mother was angry? That's what I sound like. That's exactly who I was. I was the angry spouse trying to get him to stop drinking. Well, it didn't work. And 25 years after being married, my husband verbally, and this is the first time he's ever done, he verbally abused our daughter, who was about 24 years old then. And my mother was there. See, I was so embarrassed because I had pretended to the family that we were perfect. So nobody knew what was going on in my home. At least I thought they didn't know. And he did that in front of my mother. Well, at that point, I broke. For 4 months, I sat in my house in tears. I was embarrassed in front of my mother that my husband did this. I sat in my house in tears for 4 months crying. And I had, I guess what you guys would call, now I had been in Al-Anon, and I guess it's what you guys would call a nervous breakdown is what I had. And I ended up in a mental institution for 2 weeks, round the clock. They let me out. And then I had to come for 4 weeks to classes. Now, I didn't even tell my family about this. My mother would call me, and I wasn't home. So what I do is I told my husband, call her and then get her on a two-way, and I'll talk to her from the mental institution. Because she kept saying, something is wrong. I talk to my daughter every day. So I spent this time in a mental institution getting on anxiety and depression medicine, trying to get everything leveled out. Now, I sunk into a deep hole, a deep black hole that I couldn't see my way out. I needed to tell you that before I went to the mental institution, and why I went is because I tried to commit suicide. I started to take some pills, sleeping pills, but when I was upstairs in this dark room, I had my phone with me. It was on silent, but I had it with me, and it lit up. This green light lit up, and on my phone was a message from my niece that said, be of good cheer, God loves you. Well, I knew that was a message from my higher power. So I didn't take those sleeping pills, but the next morning I went to my doctor's office who committed me to the mental health facility once I told him what had happened. Now, that saved my life. And when I got out of the institution, my sponsor, my Al-Anon sponsor was there. I talked to her while I was in there and going to classes. She was there for me. 2 days out of the mental institution, she took me to my first assembly, and I've been going ever since. She informed me when I told her, I can't go. She says, yes, you can. Now, guys, I'm ashamed. I've just been in a mental institution, and I'm going to go to a statewide area assembly with all of these people. Well, I went. I got more hugs. I told you guys I love hugs. I got more hugs, and that's what I need. It was what I needed at that time. And I so appreciate her for taking the time and realizing what I needed, because I didn't know that's what I needed. Well, I went to that assembly, and it changed my life. And I don't think I've missed an area assembly since that first one that I went to. That's how much it means to me. Now, I'm going to tell you guys how I got to Al-Anon. Now, you know I'm a perfectionist. I'm real smart. So I researched Al-Anon on the internet, because my therapist told me to read a book that said Codependence No More, and it said Al-Anon in it. Well, I had never heard of Al-Anon before. I didn't know what it was, so I did my research, and I found out what it was. I went to Al-Anon 3 times before I went in the door. I would just go there and watch the people go in the door. I got there early so I could see the people go in the door one day, the next day, and the third time I got up enough courage to walk through the door. Now, when I got there, there were three seasoned ladies that were there, 2 gentlemen, and none of them were of color. I mean, in my sad state of mean, because I mean, I was depressed, crying, and I said, surely this can't be the place for me. It wasn't long before somebody of color did walk in the room. Matter of fact, she's my sponsor today. And before I could turn around and run and leave, somebody offered me a newcomer's packet, gave me a hug, a needed hug, and told me to sit down. Well, I cried for maybe 2-3 months at every meeting, and I went to 2 meetings a week, and I cried at all of those meetings. They were telling my story. I thought nobody in the world lived the life that I lived, but they were telling my story, and I knew that I was at the right place. The first time I shared, I cried so much, I used to sit there with my head down, because the tears were just running while they told my story. But what happened is I was able to share. And the first time I shared it, it did something to me. When I was talking to my sister earlier and telling her I was going to be here to tell my story, she says, "You're going to stand in front of all those strange people and tell them all that stuff?" I said, "It's my story. And my story is my story. You take what you like and leave the rest." And I said, "I am," just like I was going to sing for you guys, too. Well, I've been in Al-Anon since 2008, and I cannot even imagine being anywhere else. When I walked into those doors, everybody was laughing and joking, and I said to myself, this must be an AA meeting, because these people in here are too happy. They can't be as sad as I am, because they're laughing and joking. Well, today I can tell you, after years of being in Al-Anon, I know a newcomer sees me the same way, because I'm laughing and joking. That's what Al-Anon did for me. It gave me back me. It taught me how to love me, how to take care of me. I didn't know that before Al-Anon. I was always fixing. I was always the victim. I was always the martyr. I was able to forgive everybody that I thought did me wrong, because they didn't do things the way I thought they should have done things. And I was the kind of person, if you came to me with your problems, I had the answer. If I didn't have the answer, I'd make up the answer. Because I was smart like that, I would fix it for you. The first thing that I learned in Al-Anon is a 2-letter word, no. And I didn't know that word before Al-Anon, because I said yes to everybody. Because remember now, I was looking for love in all the wrong places, looking for love in too many faces. That's why I loved on everybody. Whether they, and if you didn't love me, God help you, because I was going to make you love me. I was going to find out what you like. I'd give you your favorite thing. I mean, I would just haunt you until you liked me. That's how bad I was. I just had to be loved, and that's what I did. I fixed everybody. I can remember the first time my sister, who's younger than I am, 4 years younger than I am, would call me for things, and I'd always give her. The first time she called me and asked me, I'd been in Al-Anon for a while, and I said no. And she kept talking. And then she said, "What did you say?" I said no. She said, "Why? Why are you saying no?" I said, "Because I do not want to do that." I had never been able to do that before. My sister didn't speak to me for months. I'm serious. She wouldn't even call me, because this was something she really wanted, and I said no, because I really didn't want to do it. And when I told my sponsor that I said no, she said, girl, you are growing in your program. And I knew I was, because I was able to take care of myself. That's what Al-Anon has learned for me. Now, I still say, and I'm not supposed to say that, but I still say that my husband is an alcoholic. He'll not drink for 6 or 7 months, and then he'll drink. He'll not drink for 6 or 7. See, but that's not my business anymore. I don't pour alcohol down. I don't even know how much alcohol is in the house anymore. It's not my business. Guess what? It's not in my hula hoop. So I pay attention to my business. I've given up on the Fan family. I no longer have to be a part of the Fan family. I'm realistic now. Life is what it is. I enjoy my life. I do what I have to do to make me happy. I don't try to hurt anybody in making myself happy, but I do what I can do to make me happy. Al-Anon has taught me to love me again. And I like Denise. I didn't before Al-Anon, because I was too busy taking care of everybody else that I didn't know that I didn't love me. But I love Denise. There's nothing that I have to do to earn love. It's just given freely, and I found that out. Because when I joined Al-Anon, I was so happy about these people. I'm going to tell you, for years, I opened the door. I set up all the supplies, the literature. I made the coffee. I got the key to the building. That's how sick I was. I got the key to the building. And when they got, I used to even go to the grocery store and buy them cookies. I mean, I just had everything set up. And I did it for a long time until my sponsor said to me, what are you doing? I was trying still again. Looking for love in all the wrong places. Looking for love in too many faces. Because they gave me love, I thought I had to give it back. And that was my way of giving it back. Well, my sponsor said to me, and I realized that today, you are denying somebody else service that they can be doing for the group. And I never thought about that before. Now, mind you, I was still sick. So I stopped opening every time. But I didn't give the keys up for a couple of years later. And the only reason I gave the keys up, because I wasn't going to even tell my sponsor that I still had the key. I didn't lie. I just didn't tell her. And finally, one day, she came to the meeting. I think it was the same time I did. She said, you still have the key? Uh-huh. So she said, I thought you stopped doing that. I said, oh, I stopped setting up, but I still opened the building. Because sometimes the person that opened is not there and we can't get started. She says, you know what? Sometimes maybe the meeting needs to be outside. And we have had meetings outside, because that day I gave up my key. Wasn't happy about it, but I knew it was the right thing to do. I gave up my key to the building. And we've had meetings outside in the parking lot. Wonderful meetings, because the person that had the key that was supposed to open didn't show up. So it just lets me know that higher power has a plan for us. And if we are let go and let God, what he has for us will work out. I need to share with you what I thought the 12 steps should have been when I joined Al-Anon. Now, I got this from Barbara A. from Lithia Springs, and I'm going to give her credit for it, because she may be out there right now. And I don't want to steal it without letting her know that I appreciate hearing these 12 steps. Now, step one says, I admitted I was not powerless, that their lives needed to be managed by me. Step two said, came to believe I was the power over you and I could restore you to sanity. Step three, made a decision to turn your will and your life over to me. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of everyone around me and found out everybody was lacking. Step five, admitted to God, to myself, and anyone that would listen, the exact nature of your wrongs. Step six, were entirely ready to assist you in removing your defects of character. Step 7, humbly ask you in removing your shortcomings only if it didn't cause me any harm. Step 8, made a list of all the people that had harmed me and vowed to get even with every last one of them. Step 8, waited and waited and waited and waited for everyone to make direct amends to me. Step 10, continued to take your inventory, and when you were wrong, I properly admitted it, that you were wrong. Step 11, sought through mothering, monitoring, managing, and manipulating to improve your conscious contact with me, asking that you read my mind and carry out my wishes. 12, having had a complete physical and emotional breakdown as a result of this type of living, I tried to drag all those that I love down with me to get sympathy and pity from all who would listen. Now that's the way the 12 steps should have been written. Boy, was I sick back then. Thank God for my higher power that has shown me the errors of my ways. So now I live the 12 steps as they were written. I don't make it up anymore. I have enjoyed talking to you guys. I have enjoyed singing to you guys. I want you guys to know that I knew I was going to get a chance to sing to a big audience. I knew it. I mean, I've been singing in that hairbrush and in the shower all my life. And I finally get an audience that I can sing to. I want to take the time to let you know that I would not live in this world today without Al-Anon. It is my way of life now. I have been here for 12 years, and I hope and pray that I never leave Al-Anon. I thank the alcoholics in my life, and I can't believe I'm saying that, because without them, I would have never found Al-Anon. So I thank the alcoholics in my life. I now know how to love on me, and that was important to me. I am no longer looking for love in all the wrong places. I have learned now how to look for love in all the right places. I am so grateful to have a program that pulled me out of those situations. I see my family members different. I hope that they see me. Well, I know they see me different because of that no word that I learned. I love the fellowship that I am in, the Al-Anon Alateen Worldwide Fellowship. I wouldn't know what to do without it. It has changed my life. And these are some daily affirmations that I live by. Life is not about waiting for the storm to pass, but about learning to dance in the rain. I pray that thy will be done in my life every day. I try to stop by God's fountain to get a drink every day. If I have constantly believed that God is always with me, in me, beside me, and all around me, my higher power even carries me when I need him to. So today I want to thank you guys for allowing me to tell you my story. I actually made it to 11 o'clock, so you get a little break before the next session. I think that my family will finally know, hot damn, I can sing. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate you.